the sounds of battle, the feats of brave men, political intrigue and the struggle for power. In this program, we explore sport.
History.
Our program comes to you tonight from the Thora Heard Institute for Ancient Relics.
Here, deep in the bowels, deep, deep down in the pancreatic cavity, the small intestine and the aortic valves of the Institute, you can smell history, the scent of things past.
Yes, the sheer pong of bygone ages, the absolute of things that are really old and past their sell-by date. The completely, that is absolutely disgusting.
Carl, thank you. I think we've had enough of that. In our exploration of all things historical, I'll be reading extracts from a controversial new book, Joan of Arc, Things I Wish I'd Known at 18. But first, a radical new interpretation of biblical history is about to be published. Paul, can you tell us something about it?
Ah, well, you've heard of the Gideon Bible, and of course there's the Revised Standard Version. Well, this is the Paul Shearer Very Revised Version, with a free hold all and holiday discount voucher.
Why do you call it a Very Revised Version?
Well, for example, take Moses and the story of the burning bush. And Moses heard the voice which spake from the burning bush. And Moses approached the burning bush, and it called out to him, saying, Arg, get me out of here.
This is one of my favourite stories. It's when Paul is with that group of disillusioned fishermen in the boat on the Sea of Galilee, and the fishermen cast their nets over one side of the boat and drew them in again. But their nets were empty, and Paul spake unto them, saying, Other side, silly. And the fishermen cast their nets over the other side of the boat and drew them in again, and in those nets were 2 tons of grade A salmon. And they were astonished, and some said, This is a sign. Some said, This is Elijah. Some said, This is Elijah Bar Hepzibah. Some said there was a salmon farm on the other side of the boat.
Oh, Carl, here's the story of Joseph in Egypt. And in the land of the pharaohs, Joseph was held in captivity. His only possession was the coat that his father had given him, and this was to be the sign by which his brothers would recognize him when they came forth from the land of Canaan to deliver him from the bonds of Egypt. And the brothers came, and they said, I wouldn't be seen dead in that cagoule.
I do feel that the Bible should be brought up to date, though. For example, in the King James Version, you've got the story of Aaron and his rod, which turns into a serpent. Well, in my version, we've moved with the times, and we have the story of Aaron and his rod, which turns into a large and rather vulgar kitchen utensil.
Paul, just what did you base all this information on?
Well, allow me to introduce my researcher, Flora McBiddy.
McBiddy?
Hello.
Oh, she's got a wonderful memory. She uses poems to help her remember.
Oh, yes, I can remember everything that's happened in the last 3 centuries. And I know what you're thinking. That's probably because you were there, you cheeky wee bastards. No, if I were wanting to recall who was the King of France in 1956, for example, I'd use this simple little rhyme. The King of France pulled down his pants, went into a trance, did a dance, hence there was no king in 1956.
Oh,
see how it works? Simple yet complex. Another example, and this next one helps me to recall minutiae about the reign of Mary, Queen of Scots. Oh, Mary, Queen of Scots, had a bad dose of spots. She wore black quite a lot, got married, and stuffed it quite young. So, you see, it's an infallible method, and it helps to separate the chaff from the grain of fat so they can be stored in the great warehouse of historical foodstuffs. Another fail-safe method is, of course, the conundrum. So here we go. Let's see if you can get this one. My first is in fish, but not in a banana.
Mm-hmm.
My second is in trouser, but not in underpants.
Mm-hmm.
My third is in tra-la-la, but not in tra-la-la-la-la.
Mm-hmm.
And my 20th is in a small 19th century Norwegian castle, but not in Angela Rippon.
Mm.
What am I? Well, of course, I'm the Reformation, and that's the beauty of it. It's a simple rule for history, but I swear by it. So, I hope I've been of some help to you young lads and lasses, and the main thing is to work out a system for remembering and to stick to it. Now, what do you see your name for again?
Amanda.
Yeah.
Step into the corridor, will you?
No.
Amanda, you gorgeous, raven-haired, sexpot, you sugary, spicy, scintillating genius, just step into the corridor, will you?
All right. Carl, you've never talked to me like this before. What do you want?
Nothing, you thick-headed git. I just wanted to get away from that woman.
Oh, I hate you, Carl Gorham.
Let's go in here.
Look. Statues of Zeus, Apollo, and Athena, a bust of Alexander the Great, a model of ancient Athens, and the complete works of Plato and Aristotle.
Ah, yes. The Incas.
No, Carl. It's not the Incas.
It is.
Listen, pea-brain, it's not. And I don't know what gives you the idea that it is.
It's all those old films, you know. Ben-Hur, Spartacus, at Pompeii. They can teach you a lot about history, actually.
Ancient History, brought to you by the Entertainment Leisure Education Corporation of America. As the ancient world recovered from the terrible wars that had rocked the very foundations of the earth itself, the Greeks set about establishing those ideals that we still cherish to this day. The Olympics. Democracy. Moussaka. But in another corner of the Mediterranean, the evil Genghis Khan and his Mongol hordes threatened to overthrow them. Meanwhile, Alexander the Great had joined the communists and was sweeping down from the north with the Vikings to do battle with Hannibal the barbarian elephant trainer, who was knocking at the very gates of Rome itself, a city ruled by the iron fist of Stalin, who had declared himself Pope. Just as Adolf Hitler, the Nazi terror, had done a few years earlier in 38 BC. Soon, however, one small boy was to change history. His name was Claudius, and he was going to become emperor of all China. Thank goodness he was an American.
Not only have we learnt a great deal from American movies, but also earlier this year, Kevin and Jacqueline Moreno came across some hitherto undiscovered material that may radically alter our view of history. Jacqueline, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about this new material.
Well, I was clearing out an old cupboard and suddenly there it was.
There what was?
A box full of cassette tapes.
This is history tape number 4, which seems to be dated from about 500 AD.
Welcometh to whomsoever listeneth to this very important historical information, which has never been uncovered before, but was found by Kevin and Jacqueline. I am speaking to you from the Dark Ages. It is very dark. That is the most important historical feature about the Dark Ages. They are very dark. That is why they are called the Dark Ages.
It's very spooky, listening to someone who actually lived in 500 AD.
Can we perhaps hear some of the other tapes?
Oh, yes, of course.
Hello, this is Queen Alfred here. King Alfred didn't burn the cakes, actually. That's just a rumour put about by men in order to keep women in the kitchen. Well, it's not true. King Alfred's quite a good cook, in fact. Last night we had squid done in a lovely lemony sauce.
Here's another tape. This one's very old.
Hello. I am from the Iron Age. It is called the Iron Age because all the men do the ironing. While the women... Okay, just come. While the women lie around in hammocks getting stoned with some friends from the Stone Age.
Oh, come on, this is utterly ridiculous.
Amanda, you shouldn't prejudge these
Look,
things.
Carl, I know about early history. In fact, I've made a very interesting discovery about early man in Britain. You know, archaeologists have been able to show us exactly what our ancestors looked like through discoveries like Piltdown Man, Peking Man. Now, Carl, I myself have made something of a discovery in this field.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. Earlier this week, at the bottom of my garden, just in front of the Antirrhinums, I found what can only be described as a Paleolithic burial mound.
I think it's a molehill, actually.
I excavated the site and discovered the remains of Woolwich Man. By piecing together the bones, I've established a fairly accurate picture of exactly who was living at 27B Whitlock Terrace, SE22, a quarter of a million years ago. Significantly, he's quite a bit taller than modern man.
Amanda, he's got 3 legs.
But there are many similarities in the cranial structure.
Isn't the head supposed to be above the shoulders?
Although the skeletal framework is essentially the same, he had a different number of ribs.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
And a longer neck.
139, 140, 140. Amanda, he's got 142 ribs. He's made of papier-mâché and he's held together with Evo sticks.
Look, Carl, what have you got against Woolwich Man?
I just can't imagine going jogging with him, that's all.
Look, Carl, he didn't jog. He sort of crawled around.
On all fives?
Look, Carl.
Amanda, you've got it all wrong. History isn't about digging up a lot of old bones. It's about people discovering how they lived and worked. Social history. The 1930s. Take spitting, for example.
Spitting?
Yes, originally a sign of affluence, it completely died out in Britain until 1934 when Arthur Higgins of Hume Close Barnsley spat on his wife when she accidentally put his homing pigeons through the mangle.
She shouts, "Eeyow, but Higgins, I'll get thee for this."
She threw a bathtub full of coal at him, he went down the pub and J.B. Priestley wrote a novel about him.
Carl, that is a terrible case of stereotyping people from the north.
Beegum lush.
It's true. Albert's sister works in the canteen of this very institute, Elsie Higgins. She used to be in a double act with Reggie Pulse. You remember them?
No. Hee, them were the days, eh, Reggie?
Hee, not our far, Elsie. Oh, how I remember when you used to immerse yourself in a 6-foot tank of castor oil and sing, "There'll always be an England."
Hee, and you would fry eggs while hanging upside down and snugging with the stage manager.
Hee, remember Frank? Hee. Foolish Frank and his exploding feet.
He formed a double act with a quick change artist from Upton Park with that lovely vignette about Madame Curie's discovery of radium with her singing to him, "There's something glowing in the sink."
Oh. Crazy Daisy.
Carl, this is no more than two brain-addled old fools making up stories to relieve the boredom of washing up. You obviously don't realise the painstaking work that original historical research involves.
I do. As a matter of fact, I was in the Viking room all morning doing some extremely original research. Listen to this.
"From the place of the seven ravens on the black fjord they sailed to conquer new lands. The sons of Bjorn the Breathless, grandsons of Njal the Wheezy, great-grandsons of Thor the Asthmatic, great-great-grandsons of Olaf the a bit chesty, great-great-great-grandsons
oh,
of..."
Get on with it.
"And so they sailed across the North Sea, three men whose very names would strike terror into the hearts of the bravest. Eric the Red, Eric the Blue, and their sensitive brother, Eric the with a hint of peach. No sooner did their longships reach the shores of England than they set to work, looting.
Loot.
Pillaging.
Pillage.
And redecorating.
And then team the curtains with the off-beige woodwork to set off the deeper brown of the mud floor.
Before the sun had set, the Viking men tasted the fruits of conquest.
Let us gnaw the bones of the roasted ox.
Let us drink me for the cup of victory.
And I'll just have a small sud in the Perrier water, please."
The three brothers went their separate ways and established their own kingdoms. In the west, Eric the Red made the people of Wessex toil long and hard to build the finest castle in all of England.
"Oi, peasant, stop shirking and bring that 20-ton block over here."
In the north, Eric the Blue, finding Lake Windermere, took up valuable farmland, ordered his serfs to remove it. And in the south, Eric the White with a hint of peach established the harshest regime of all, forcing the people of London to appear in his new smash hit musical, The Sound of Vikings.
5, 6, 7, 8. Oh, get those legs up. On the beat, Olaf, dear. You're behind.
Meanwhile, in the Far East, the Chinese discover gunpowder.
Oh, gunpowder.
Carl.
Yes.
What is going on here? We are doing a programme about history, and what are we talking about? We're talking about looting, pillaging, plundering, war, destruction, and gunpowder. Now, what is wrong?
We haven't covered football since 1821.
No, Carl. Men. Our survey of history has been all about men.
Oh, I know what you mean. We've left out something that's very important.
Yes, Carl.
Horses. We haven't talked about the vital importance of Henry V needing his horse, of King Arthur loving his horse, of Princess Anne looking like a horse.
Carl, women.
I beg your pardon?
Women, woman in history.
Oh, yes, there was a woman in history, wasn't there? Laura Ashley.
Laura Ashley?
Yes, Laura Ashley was the first woman in history, and she begat hundreds and thousands of buxom women in loud floral prints, and they begat the other one. Oh, what's her name? Fatima Whitbread.
Oh, Carl, shut up. I can see I'm going to have to do my research elsewhere.
Ah, welcome to the Florence Nightingale Institute of Women's History Research. I'm the feminist historian here at the Institute. I did my first degree in French and women's studies at Hull University, specializing in the women's movement in the 30s and why one-side sites are always too small.
Oh. Could you teach me something about women's history?
Of course again, sister. What's your name?
Amanda Marie Curie, Germaine Greer, Posy Simmons, Gloria Hunniford, Streisand Swift. But my boyfriend calls me Mandy.
Well, Mandy, it all began with Lilith, who was the first matriarch of the universe, uh-huh. And she was a formless mouth of love and peace and sisterhood with 14 breasts.
Really?
She began from her own bosoms, Eve.
Oh, I see. So she was, in a sense, the first and ultimate single mother.
Exactly. Eve lived as a single independent woman in the Garden of Eden.
Well, what about Adam?
One day in the garden, Eve felt a bit lonely, so she blew her nose in what came out we now call man.
Women just carried on from there.
Yes, right through the Ice Age, or the Nice Age, as we call it, because there weren't any men around. And into the Bible, you remember the story of Noel's Ark?
Thought it was Noah's Ark.
No, dear. All the females of the species went in two by two, and there was a 24-hour women's disco, and we all laid free-range eggs and knitted earrings. None of us were anorexic, none of us had hang-ups about being really fat, and all of us ate Mr. Kipling's fond and fancies all day and slept soundly all night because all the babies organized themselves so that they only needed feeding while Women's Hour was on the radio.
Oh, I see. And after Noel's Ark?
Well, then it was just a straight line of strong, self-reliant achievers through Elizabeth I to Amy Johnson to our modern-day heroine, Diana Ross.
Oh, I see. Thank you.
Amanda!
Go away, Carl!
Amanda, let me in!
What's the password?
Just open the door, you stupid incompetent woman!
That's right. What do you want?
I've been tracing my family tree.
Oh, fascinating. Any excitement? Any women, heroes, pirates, robbers, inventors?
No, not really. I've discovered I come from a very long line of VAT inspectors. All my family from 1300 to the present day were VAT inspectors or accountants, all worked for the Inland Revenue, except for the Alford branch of the family.
Well, there you are, then.
They were all ledger clerks.
Carl, accountants have always been very important people in history. It's a position of responsibility. Let me show you. We'll go back, Carl, back in history to the medieval court of the Dukes of Burgundy, where your ancestor, Osric Gorham, is the talented but ruthless court accountant.
What about your ancestors?
Well, my antecedent in the court was the beautiful and charismatic Lady Guinevere, whose grace and charm captivated every man ever to set eyes on her. Paul, you appear as my suitors, my admirers, mm-hmm. the courtiers, mm-hmm. the army, mm-hmm. the jester, mm-hmm. the cooks, the grooms, yeah. the footmen, the mm-hmm. gravedigger, the pheasants, and the pest control mm-hmm. inspector. Mm-hmm.
I think you'll find that I'm more than able to meet the demands of all those roles. In fact, I could do with something a little meatier.
What about me? You're a princess, Morwenna.
Nice, but you're dead.
Well, why do I have to be dead? Well, life expectancy was very short in the Middle Ages. Now lie on the floor and try not to breathe. Ready? Dawn at the Burgundian court. King John is putting down the barons.
Oi, barons, you're dreadful.
Already in his counting house, the ruthless Osric Gorham is assessing the Duke's finances.
Excuse me?
Yes, Sir Osric.
Is that hair on your head?
Yes, sirrah.
Well, I've just invented the hair tax. Give me some money.
But, sire, I have not a ducat to my name.
What's this in your wallet, then?
Carl, sirrah, get off me. Stop that. It's my wallet.
546 in a travel car. That'll do.
In her boudoir, the lovely Guinevere receives one of her many suitors. Sir Lancelot, you have penned me an ode so early this fair morn.
Have I?
Yes, you have. Here it is. Read it.
Right.
Oh, fairest Guinevere, you're really, 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 really pretty. And really, 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 really nice. And you're much more beautiful than Morwenna.
Excuse me, I don't... Oh, shut up, Morwenna, you're dead. And you're beginning to go off as well.
Sir Osric is now settling an outstanding tax bill owed by the rather too wealthy Sir Lancelot. So, you agree that half your property now belongs to me?
All right, then.
Right, give me the keys, then. What? Your flat in Ballampool? Half of it's mine.
What's going on?
And, Sir Lancelot, you agree to do anything to win my hand?
Yes.
Then go to the highest tower in the kingdom and jump into the shallowest moat.
Give me your BMW, Paul.
Look, this is getting out of order, actually.
Treachery! Executioner, off with his head!
Come on, leave it out.
Oh, look, blood everywhere.
Look, Carl, I think this is getting a bit too violent.
I'm sorry, Amanda, but history is like that.
And now, Triumph of Blood, Carl Gorham's series on the British military history. This week, The Charge of the Light Brigade. With Carl is Amanda Swift, author of The Other Crimea, Feeling and Sensitivity in the British Army.
September 1878, Britain is at war with Russia. It is a bloody war. Devastation, death and disease ravage the Allies, yet they remain doggedly determined, fiercely loyal and united.
Yet they also felt a kind of emotional insecurity, a kind of lack of personal growth. They'd never been able to talk through their problems, to explore and to discuss their feelings.
These men were veterans. All they felt was the hunger in their bellies, the pain of their wounds, the thirst for revenge.
And they felt that they'd never really been close to their mothers.
Lord Raglan was the commander.
A man.
Captain Nolan, his chief aide.
A man.
Was frequently at loggerheads with Lord Cardigan.
Another man.
The chief medical officer, Fitzroy Ponsonby.
Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear.
Was assisted by Florence Nightingale.
A woman.
Colonel Gordon of the Highlanders, 6'9", 17 stone, a vast brooding killer, fierce, brave and a warrior.
Yes, I think there was a different side to him. He was gentle. He loved children. He crocheted for hours. Then sponge cakes and sang.
And yet there was a third side to him which was even more brutal. He used to get his knife out, go out into the street and for fun...
I think you'll find there was a fourth side to his character. He organised the first creche in the Crimea.
Right, the battle. The morning of the battle, the Allies are drawn up in three ranks on the reverse of a concave slope. The back rank can see the Russians, but the front rank can't. But they can see the back rank, while the middle rank can see what the front rank of the back rank can see, but it looks a bit different. The troops in the centre are moved to the left, because those on the left will be moved to the right. But they think they're in the centre, because those on the right have moved even further to the right. So those in the centre are now on the left of those on the right, who've moved back to the left, because those on the left have disappeared.
It's the age-old problem. Men just can't read maps.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our exploration into history.
Hey, Carl, I wonder what's behind that door. Let's go in there.
No, you're not allowed in there.
Why not?
It's the gents.
Not that door, Carl. This door.
Oh, no, we definitely can't go in there.
How do you know?
That big sign on the door saying you definitely can't go in here.
Carl, you've got no sense of adventure.
I have. What about when I stayed up late to watch the hockey in the Olympics?
Oh, Carl. Gosh, look. No one's been in here for years.
How could you tell?
That big sign on the wall. Carlsberg Complaints Department.
Look at this ancient piece of papyrus.
Papyrus.
Whosoever findeth the ancient brooch of Marmora... will lose weight and meet a nice boy.
Yes, so it does. I must find the ancient brooch of Marmora. It will be my life's mission to locate it. I shall travel to the ends of the earth, yes, and beyond.
Here it is, found it, under the stone.
Give it to me, I want it.
Well, hello there.
Blimey, I'm down to 4 stone.
You must be Carl. Hello.
Oh. He is gorgeous.
Who are you?
Give it here, it's mine.
My name is Shira. I am a eunuch.
Oh, you can keep it, Carl.
I come from the lost civilization of Bakia.
What do you want, Shira?
Nothing, bye.
This is all very strange. Papyrus, brooches and eunuchs.
Yes, the new album by Def Leppard.
What's happening?
The floor. It's opening.
What should we do?
Simple. Fall.
Ah! Where are we?
This must be the lost world of Bakia.
Oh, yes. How do you know, Carl?
That sign over there. Welcome to Bakia. Twinned with Swindon.
Hold it right there, English or fools.
Rosevand Tirpitz, Nazi spy and part-time archaeologist.
If it isn't Indiana Gorham and the Temple of Lard. Prepare to die the death of 1,000 small noises.
Oh, no. I can't stand it.
Amanda, distract her.
Rosa, you've got a bogey on your chin.
Oh, not there.
Aha! Take that. And that. And that. And that. And take that. And one for luck.
Carl, will you stop hitting me?
Sorry. Rosa's escaped with a brooch.
Then could we please get out of here?
Right. This way. Along this passage. Look out. A heavy boulder.
Careful.
Snakes. There's a creeping vine. Duck. A flight of arrows. Quicksand.
Carl, you haven't moved.
Amanda, I'm radio acting. I am building up a strange world of imagination and mystery for the listener.
Why don't we just go out of this door marked exit?
Spoil, spoil. It's locked.
Carl, I'm tired. I want to go home. Stop this knock. It is locked. Oi, let us out.
Oh, did you lock it?
Yes.
And the brooch?
Safe.
And the radio shop?
Ours. All ours.
Gorham and Quick's Declaration of History was written and performed by Carl and Mann, with Morwenna Banks and Paul Shearer. Additional material by Phil Knife, Arthur Smith and Michael Hatch. Produced by Mark Robson.